So let's use you as a case study real quickly. Would you say we're in the spectrum, 10 being
I don't know if
most
I feel comfortable with you. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. With 10 being the most organized and one just being totally scatterbrained, can't even find your own car keys. Where would you put yourself?
Oh.
And don't give me a political answer right in the middle.
Oh, goodness. A 3.
Okay.
And that's so, being probably generous.
So I, 3.
The absent-minded professor is my family of origin.
Okay. So so if we were to go into your closet, would we see that 3 manifest itself? Or are all the blue shirts with the blue shirts, the white shirts with the white shirts?
Weirdly, if you went now, it's actually organized. But because I was so tired of living after years and years in a lack of organization, that I've actually that there's now a system, but that would not that was hard for me.
Okay,
that was a lot of time.
Right.
Yeah.
So what you did there, so you're the case study so far is working out. That's a natural. That didn't happen naturally, but if somebody your behavior, your outward behavior in the realm of your closet is organized, but you're having to work at it, and you found a reason why you wanted to do that.
Yeah.
So you're able to be successful even in an area that's not coming naturally.
Yep.
But if you were in a role that required supreme organization all of the time, it's not that you couldn't do it.
It would be exhausting.
But you wouldn't be able to do it as well as other people. And as you pointed out, it would be exhausting.
And I wouldn't enjoy it. I mean, that's the whole deal. Yeah, it would not be. I don't find joy organizing my shirts, for instance.
That's right. Yeah. So I think so. If we make the distinction between what somebody's hardwiring is and what their outward behavior is, then I think it's a little bit easier to understand.
Hey, welcome to the More Than Money Podcast. This is Chris Burns. I hope you're having a great week. I'm excited. Scott Kaufman understands how people are built. He has spent the last few decades as an executive recruiter, launched his own recruiting firm 16 years ago, Convergence Recruiting. And if you think about what a recruiter does, they have to figure out who has the exact right skill set, the right gift mix to fit a certain position. And so they're constantly trying to see what is the right fit. Well, Scott realized when his own kids were preparing for college that that same skill set was crucial for parents and kids to understand where should I go to school? What career should I pursue? And never has this been as big of an issue as it is today. The cost of higher education has gone a little bit wacky. It's gone insane, right? It is not abnormal now to easily spend 6 figures sending a child to school, and either you spend it or your kid takes on a mountain of debt. So to do all that and then realize, wait a minute, this wasn't the right school or the right major, the right vocation to pursue, that could be a devastating thing. That's a lot of money to put out there. And college, I mean, high school guidance counselors who can be fantastic have to deal with hundreds of students. So is there a way to help your kid understand who are they, what are they built for, where are they best going to perform in the future, what are they called to be vocationally, right? And that's what Scott did. So we founded MyCareerIQ.net. Again, MyCareerIQ.net, which is just using those same tools he used as a recruiter, and he still does, to help parents and students figure out where is the right fit moving forward. So I thought this was a fascinating conversation, again, primarily because I have 2 kids in middle school. I know so many of the folks I work with have kids or grandkids that are looking towards their futures, and the stakes are so much higher now than they ever were before because of the cost. So if that is something interesting to you, I really encourage you to listen to this podcast, think of questions that you have, and think about how it might relate to your student and how they can pick what they're going to be doing in the future. If you have any questions, feel free to jump on my website. It's mylifeismore.com. And if you want to talk to Scott directly, again, mycareeriq.net. But enjoy the show. But when you were going to college, did you went to college?
Yep.
I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Was it assumed when you were in grade school and high school that you were going to go to college at that point? Like, what was your family's feel about education?
Yeah, it was. It was just it was given us. It was an assumption. I mean, my dad was a Princeton grad. We were, you know, wow. He was an engineer. Middle class family. We lived in a pretty affluent area, and it was just kind of assumed.
Did you know when you went to school what you wanted to do in essence, or what was the journey you took?
No idea. And actually, one of the reasons that I've gotten into this outgrowth, my main business through the years has been executive recruiting,
right.
But then this coaching of younger people and their families has been an outgrowth of that. Two of the main reasons are, one is I was told all through my high school and college years, oh, you should be this.
Huh.
And I went that direction. And then I had about a 10-year plus or minus bumpy road from a career perspective.
Yeah.
So I kind of lived doing it the wrong way, listening. And then the other one was when my own kids were going through it, and I saw how little help they got from some of the educational establishments.
Well, one of the reasons I want to talk to you is because I have lived since, so I had the same experience. I went to
college. We're not alone.
Huh?
We're not alone.
We're not alone. I had no idea what I wanted to major in when I went to school. I literally just picked, this seems kind of interesting to me. It was history, and I loved it. I still love it. And then I had no clue, even by the time I finished school, exactly what I wanted to do. I didn't have set plans there, and I started working in churches just because I kind of fell into it, because my dad had been a pastor, and
right.
I was a hippie. I got married in college. We had kids, so it was like, we need to have money. So it was easy for me to go get a job with a church, and you can rip that, it doesn't matter. It was easy for me to get a job with a church, and so that was what I fell into. And it took me 10 years to figure out what I wanted to do. But that being said, I kind of have assumed since then that's just kind of the journey that young people take. Like, it's no one can really, quote unquote, know anymore exactly the area they want to move into. So we all have to go through this multi-year journey of figuring
right.
it out and going to a different area. And one of the most fascinating things, looking at what you're doing, and we haven't really dug into this yet, is just, it seems like you're saying, no, we don't have to go that way. Or maybe I'm wrong. You tell me.
Yeah, no, I would say it's not a formula. Hmm. It's not a formula that always works, but there is a lot of additional information that we can glean from what our kids are good at and what they gravitate towards. And so we can give them some much better advice than we have been. I would say, Chris, that back in the day when college was a lot more affordable, it was sort of okay to take that route and say, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do, but the society seems to value a college degree. So what the heck, let me just get the degree and I'll figure it out later.
Yeah.
But now with the cost of college where, I mean, I have a friend who sent his daughter to University of Maryland. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure for some majors, it's a great school, but it's not like somebody's going to look on your resume and see University of Maryland. Oh, wow. He was spending $45,000 a year.
Right.
So you're looking at $180,000 a year after you figure room, board, travel, all of those things. $180,000 for a college degree from a okay or a pretty good university.
Well, both my parents went to Maryland, so be careful. They're going to.
Funny that I would pick that example. So no offense intended.
No, but you're exactly right. It's not like oh, we're going to Harvard.
That's
and
right.
So I'm going to turn around and maybe have a career.
Yeah, the ROI
right
is
away.
There.
Right. Yeah. No, that's
yeah.
So that's very fair.
Yeah. So back in the day, I mean, I ended up putting myself through college. I made some bad choices
yeah.
that sort of got myself kicked out of the nest, and so. You know, I don't deserve the big pat on the back for putting myself through school, but I did do that, and I did that working at an extremely glamorous job in Athens at the Crystal on Baxter Street. Some of our listeners will probably remember that, but that's not, so you're looking at a minimum wage job,
right?
And I was able to go through school, and I came out with about $2,000 in college debt after a four-year degree. You can't do that today.
That's insane. My grandparents... Two things I want to talk about at my grandparents, because I'd like your perspective on this. They went to school way back. They went to school, I would have graduated in the 50s, early 50s from college, and they both went to Maryland. So again, be careful. And he worked in the dining commons, for instance. He worked serving breakfast, making coffee in the dining commons. was enough to cover his entire educational cost, books, right, room, board, everything. Again, minimum wage in the dining commons. I worked in the dining commons where I went to school at Taylor University, making $5 an hour or whatever it was at that point. It wasn't enough to cover books. So that dramatic of a shift, and doing the same job, but that kind of crazy inflation.
Yeah, that's an interesting case study. Yeah.
Well, then tell me the case study.
No, I'm saying yours is an interesting case study, but it's so analogous.
It's the same job.
Yeah.
But it was interesting too, because he knew, I haven't done enough interviews with folks of his generation to really see, was this just him? Because he's a truly unique person, or was this widespread in his generation? No one in his life ever said to him growing up, you need to go to college. And in his generation, it was that very abnormal where he lived to go to college. His brother went, and that was a huge inspiration. Then he had one high school teacher that said, maybe you should consider this. But his parents never talked to him about it. In fact, when he left the house, they just said, all right, have a good time. Hope it goes well. Like that was it. It was just, I'm going to go do this. And yet he had this very clear direction And I'm wondering, do you think there's a cultural shift? Humans haven't changed, but is there a cultural shift? Is there a reason why generations today have seemingly hardly any idea when they go to school what they want to do, and yet it's just kind of assumed, whereas his generation, he had to make the choice to go to school, but boy, he knew what he was doing at that point.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought. I don't know that I've pondered it in exactly that way. I mean, there are a number of shifts. It used to be that there were a lot more blue collar and sort of factory type jobs,
sure,
and so you could get to the end of your high school education and still have a job that would pay relatively well.
Yeah. There's like a thriving vocational workforce.
Yeah, yeah. And so that element has changed a lot. I think there's probably a movement around the country that everybody deserves a college education and needs a college education. And some would say, you know, we should make college free for everybody. So I think there are a lot more people that are encouraged to go through college that maybe won't need the degree,
sure,
or they're just not as academically inclined, and maybe maybe our society has maybe started putting a little bit less value on people that are good with their hands and can do a craft. So I think there have definitely been some shifts, and you can actually see it in the graduation rates. I mean, I haven't researched what graduation rates used to be, but now when you're looking at it, I think it's something like 46% of people that go to college get their degree within 4 years.
Wow.
And it's right around 55% that finish and get a degree, whether we're talking 5, 6, 7 years. So a huge number of people are going off to school and not even finishing. And part of the tragedy is there's this weird thing going on where companies will either require a degree or they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're one or two credits short, you don't have a degree. And so you could have learned 99.9%. You could be missing a phys ed class and not have the degree. And you're almost a second class citizen. Mm. So there are a number of weird dynamics that are going on.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you probably need some kind of complex algorithm to figure out all the whys behind it. But then you throw into that what we were talking about earlier with the inflation and the cost of the education.
Right.
And then, yeah, so it's easy for me to get in a soapbox and go a couple of different tangents. But so,
yeah, I totally think that's where we want to go, though, because I think most parents are sitting and looking, and it's fast becoming this. So it's hard to even... It's hard when over such a brief period of time, the costs have risen so much, because so many clients I sit with, even when they were in school, it wasn't that way, and they haven't yet sent a kid. So it's kind of, they've heard about that. But as they begin really thinking about it, it's like, wow, this expense for me is maybe the number one thing other than retirement that I'm looking at paying for suddenly.
Right.
And then to add insult to injury there, not that we're going to, because we don't have an answer here, but is the more that there is discussion of you know, basically nationalizing education like other countries, like, you know, some of Europe has done, where it's like, well, we're going to, the government's going to cover the cost.
Right.
It makes people start going, wait a minute. So I might pay, because my kid is closer to college. Here I am. I'm going to pay $180,000 to send him to Maryland. And in 5 years or 10 years, it could be a covered cost. Like, where does that put me? Anyway, so there's a lot of consternation right now for people trying to figure out how to do this. And into that void, here you step. So talk a little bit about what you're doing and why you've chosen to make this such a big part of your vocation when, you know, really you were doing executive recruiting and you've slipped into this.
Yeah. So good question. So basically in the executive recruiting world, a company hires me to find the best of the best.
Right.
But because of what I do, a lot of people that are in some type of career or job transition get referred to me. It's not what I get paid to do. It's more of ministry and volunteer time.
Huh.
But a high percentage of the time, those people were in some type of a career crisis.
Mm.
And because of what I do and what I get paid for, I was able to add value to that. But I ended up viewing that a little bit more like an ambulance at the bottom of the career mountain. Sometimes they were in a situation where they had chosen a profession because their dad wanted them to do it. They were in a situation maybe like you or I were, where it was like, oh, you should do this, or you should, and it turns out it wasn't a right fit, but you went down that road X number of years only to find out you were going down the wrong path.
Right.
So anyway, a little bit more ambulance at the bottom of the career mountain, and a little bit of over-dramatization. But then as my own kids were reaching this stage, I realized with young people, there was a chance to sort of have more of a ripple in the pond effect and be more of a guardrail at the top. And the short story is, I decided to use what I was using in my executive search practice, the assessment, the interviewing, knowledge of hiring and careers and things like that, to be able to help them better choose in advance what type of career they should migrate towards, not necessarily to pick at eighth grade, you should be an X, Y, Z or something that specific, but which careers to migrate towards at a young age so that they didn't end up needing my help in career crisis when they were 35 or 45 or 55 type of thing.
And in theory, that's what guidance counselors, so high school, college guidance counselors, I remember having those discussions on some level. But this is clearly different. So is there a level of what's the difference between what you're doing and what in theory your kids would be doing anyway in their high school?
Yeah. So good point. One is just the ratio. I mean, most public schools, the ratio, a good ratio would be one counselor to 350 students.
Wow.
It can go as high as 500 or more. So that's part of it. The other is the academic counselors are great and doing God's work, and so I don't want to come across as negative there. But they tend to be more academicians. Is that a word? Academicians?
They're academics.
And we have slight tangent. There's a former dean of a nationally respected law school, and he said, we're not teaching our students how to practice law.
Mm.
We're teaching them how to get a law degree.
Hmm.
And so there's this mismatch between what academics tend to teach and what the business world or the corporate world tends to need. So I think that being 20 plus years in the recruiting business and just sort of living and breathing, hiring and interviewing, those types of things, it's an advantage. It's a perspective that I bring to it. That plus the assessments, the schools are probably with budgets and other things, they're really only limited to some of the free assessments that are available.
Sure.
As opposed to
the free assessments. I had one or two that were just starting out, and it was just very generic.
Yeah, and they can be good. I mean, it's a matter of degrees.
Mm.
So what we'll end up doing is we're measuring certain key things that have a disproportionate impact on what a teen or 20-something should be doing based on how they were created, what their abilities are, what their interests are, some of those types of things. So we're able to, it's a more expensive approach than free counseling at the public school system, obviously.
Yeah, sure.
But it's more tailored, and it's a deeper dive on things that matter and make a difference in their decisions.
What are some of the tangible things you've seen? I guess if we walk through this for a second, when I talk with high school students and college students about these sorts of things, almost invariably, and not 2% of the time, probably 90% of the time, if I ask even college students, do you have an idea what direction you want to go in? It's about 90% that say, I'm just not sure yet. Mm-hmm. I'm undecided.
Right.
And I remember for a while I did recruiting for a financial firm in college, and I met with hundreds of college students, and I would ask them, I'd get referred to talk to them, and I'd say, well, kind of, what are you going in? And even juniors and seniors, often it was, I'm not quite landed yet. I don't quite know yet. What have you seen tangibly? Like what process are you walking through where this is that different? Is it clear? I mean, what does that look like?
Yeah. So what we're able to do is when somebody goes through our process, part of our deliverable is coming up with a list of five career choices or families of careers. When I say families of careers, I mean like you could say teacher, and that could be a teacher in a school, but that could also be like a software trainer where you're teaching people or whatever.
So that would
be an example of a family of jobs.
Yeah.
You know, teacher, trainer, you know, that type of thing. So we'll come up with five that are matching with how it looks like they're created from the consulting that we do with them to the assessments. And then we'll come up with multiple majors, college majors, for each one of those career decisions that will give them a direction to go. Mm. And so a little bit of behind the scenes, the name of my company used to be Right Major, Right Career. And I changed it to MyCareerIQ.net because what I realized was in the name, I was implying that there's one right major and one right career. And that's just not the case. It's a progressive revelation type thing. So what we're doing is, so I mentioned what our deliverable is, but then it's not like, it's not like going through a fast food restaurant and saying, okay, here's what, you know, we sort of want this automatic, instant answer.
Sure.
You know, it's a lot more like a dating or a courtship type thing where it's a progressive revelation. So what I'll do is I'll give them this deliverable and say, here are hints and clues, and it won't surprise me or your parents or you if what you ultimately end up choosing is on that list.
Right.
But it's important to understand a couple of things. Number one, why what things are on that list are on that list. So you can use it to sort of validate and use it to make other decisions. But then a lot of the homework comes back to you. You've got to be able to say, okay, if let's just say, you know, some kind of a marketing communication person is on that list. Well, what does that really mean? I mean, most adults would have trouble explaining what's involved with that, let alone a high schooler or a college person who's never had a real full-time job.
Sure.
So the onus is on them to then do some of the research online, shadow somebody, do informational interviews to be able to see what's really involved with that. Because you're saying it's common to talk to people and say, I don't really know what I want to do. Well, I've talked to people that say, this is what I want to do. And then I've said, have you spent time looking over the shoulder of that type of person?
Right.
Because we've all probably heard the stories of somebody.
Oh, sorry, hold on. Forgot that was on. Go ahead. So
we've all probably heard stories of people that have gone through and gotten an expensive degree in X, and then a couple of years out, it's like, oh, this is not what I bargained for. This is not what I want to be doing at all. And then what are you going to do? Go back and get another 4-year degree?
What's the process to change gears there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, that's interesting. There is that level of, you kind of said it earlier too, with even with guidance counselors, this is not to be offensive to guidance counselors because there's plenty of great ones out there.
Absolutely.
But how do I give guidance towards a career that I've never seen or been a part of?
Right.
Right. How do I tell a student, you know, you think you're a good fit for this. If I've never done that, and I have no real practical connection to what it looks like to do it.
Right.
And you're saying, you know, hey, can we actually connect? If a kid says, I want to be a doctor, all right, well, can we have you shadow a doctor for a day? Like, what does it actually mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And I've challenged my students, the students that I'm coaching, to invest 40, 60, 80, even 100 hours into investigating. And that sounds like a monumental task. Mm. But what I remind them of is if you get into a job, you're going to spend a minimum of 2,000 hours a year. I'm sure, Chris, you're probably working 4,000 hours a year. Well, but
a few hours.
But you know, so 2,000 hours a year for 2, 3, 4 years. So there's a saying that I stole from one of the branches of the military. The more you sweat in peace, the less you bleed in war.
Hmm.
And again, not to over-dramatize things, but if you apply that to doing the homework to figure out what type of career is really going to fit, you know, then giving up a couple of days of your spring break or some of your weekend time when you want to be hanging out with friends to make sure that how you're going to be spending 9 to 5, you know, that's a great investment.
Mm.
But so I'll challenge the students to be able to do that.
And it's hard for a student to get their mind around that, I think, because the idea of spending this time up front is crucial for all these years of success and things like that. But I have experienced this. I think I used to probably I wasn't thrilled with this idea. So when I'd have people suggest to me years ago when I was just out of college and stuff, let's spend a lot of time doing, like, you know, personal inventories and Myers-Briggs and all that kind of stuff. I got tired of doing it. I did so many of them. I was like, okay, I kind of know who I am. That's great.
Assessment overload.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So, but I see more and more now the dramatic impact of that. So a personal story on this is I grew up in the age where ADHD was just becoming kind of a thing that people talked about when I was a kid. And really what was muttered under most people's breaths, most adults I'd hear talk about it, most youth pastors or teachers when I was a kid, was it's just an excuse, right? In other words, like people say that kid has ADHD or ADD, and they're just using that as an excuse because he's just a kid. He's just a boy. Boys will be boys, right? That was what I was really heard when I was growing up.
Right.
I never explored this in myself. I never thought I'd have anything like that. And boy, I started hitting some real challenges in my business as I launched a business, significant challenges. And I was going, the way I'm doing things aren't going to work. Like, consistently, there's a problem. So then start to explore it. And suddenly realizing, you know, the doctor is telling me, well, we think you have ADD, ADHD. And I'm going, I immediately wanted to reject that and say, no, I'm just, that's crazy.
But I'm
still
a boy.
The more I learned about it, and then really, truthfully, just learning about how my mind works and then going, well, how am I going to address that? What is the right fit for me? How do I have a company if I have this, if my mind works this way, has been transformative. Dramatic changes to me personally, to my relationships, to the company, because I've learned more about who I am and how I think. And I never would have believed that that was critical. And what I think you're saying, and you can tell me, no, this is not what I'm saying, is how do we help young people truly learn who they are, how they think, how they're wired, truly understand that so that from the outset, they're moving in directions that are conducive to that.
Right. Yeah. And so, again, it's not a formula,
sure,
but it would be to, and I know I've got a built-in bias on this, but to me, to not try to take a closer look at some of the assessments that are available. And people don't obviously have to do it through me. There are a lot of free resources. There are other people around the country. I'm not the, you know, the only knife in the drawer type thing. But to me, to not take advantage of some of those things to understand at a deeper level how people are wired, how our kids are wired, particularly as it relates to the things that have the biggest impact on the ability to do a career and which direction they should go. To me, that's like saying a father saying of their child who's a great athlete, all the signs of great being a great athlete, and they're like, well, he's going to turn pro someday. And in reality, our kids are going to turn pro. They're going to be professional at something, right?
Right.
Or at least we hope they're not going to be living in our basement forever.
All of our kids, hopefully, are going to become experts, professionals at something.
That's right. Yeah. And so to say, to me, to not take a look at some of those assessments would be like a dad saying, yeah, he's going to turn pro. Oh, really? That's awesome. What sport? Well, we're not really sure. Oh, well, like, how tall is he? Well, we don't really know. Haven't really seen how tall he is. How fast? Well, he seems pretty fast, but we're really not sure. And so it's just, in that example, it just seems a little bit more ludicrous. Now, organizations like sports teams, professional sports teams, and the symphony, they've got a more scientific way of figuring out who's a match with their organization than most companies do. They have a tryout. Can you catch this ball? Can you run this fast or whatever? Can you, you know, play or sing on key or whatever?
Right.
It's not that scientific. So there's, so those things do get measured in sports. And it's not, I'm jumping around with analogies a little bit, but it's not like just because somebody is really tall doesn't necessarily mean that they'll be the best basketball player in the world, but it's an advantage. And if you're short, it doesn't mean you can't make it. Some people from Atlanta will remember Spud Webb. I think he was 5'6".
Oh, man.
And
slam dunk.
Yeah.
Champion.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, but that somebody like that has to work disproportionately harder, which is fine, but you're not going to work disproportionately harder if you're not passionate about it. So in the basketball realm, you'd want to measure at least height and drive and passion.
But well, those are easily quantifiable, right? So I guess the question is, in the assessments you're doing, the way you're doing it, what are these quantifiable things that you're able to say, just like looking at someone and going, you may not love basketball, but you're tall.
Right.
That's quantifiable. How are you quantifying those things?
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the big things that we're using is an abilities assessment. And by abilities, the definition isn't what you can or can't do. It's what you can or can't do quickly and easily, because it's a competitive world out there. And let's pick problem solving. If you say you want to be a consultant, and you can solve problems, but it takes you days and days to do it, versus the person that can sort of walk onto a factory floor, into a business, and say, okay, after observing for a couple of hours, if you can't do that quickly and easily, then you're going to have trouble competing.
It'd be a tough fit, right?
Yeah. So abilities is one of them. A behavioral profile is another. It's a little bit like a personality. Mm-hmm. Passion and interests is another one. There are a handful of ones that, number one, have a disproportionate impact on the result and that don't change over time. So experience, for example, we wouldn't try to measure experience. You can list it on a resume or sort of catalog it,
sure,
but your experience is going to change. Same thing with your skill. Same thing with some of your values. We take a look at some of those, but somebody just coming out of college could be like, I really value travel, but after marriage and two kids, they might value not traveling.
Right.
So some of those things are going to change.
Yeah. So this has always been interesting, and you have a pretty broad background in this. My dad actually did a lot of work and training to do personality inventories, and I see the value of them, but I've heard it said so many times, there are certain characteristics in you that are not, they don't change over time.
Right.
And on the one hand, I kind of see that because I see that in myself. On the other hand, there's a part of me that goes, is that actually the case? Is 17-year-old me, 16-year-old me, actually, truly, when I look at 50-year-old me, going to have some of those same core things that would have directed me at that point? Like, how do you draw that line?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting. It's an interesting way to think about it, because the makers of one of the assessments that I use would say that a number of these things are determined at birth, when the brain is formed. But we just can't measure it until we get older. Okay, there are a couple of different.
How in the world do you measure that?
Well,
like how do we?
Well, so you so that's why it's theory. We're probably never going to be able to prove that.
Okay,
but if you just think about maybe introvert extrovert thing,
sure, yeah. Intuitively,
we might say if we have a 3-year-old child that just seems to love to perform and love to be around people, or even the opposite, just sort of a bookworm type or whatever, I think intuitively we would sort of guess that would probably stay with them. It doesn't mean if we had the bookworm type, it doesn't mean that they couldn't be friendly and social and not awkward in social situations, but they might prefer being alone and get their energy from that. So there's certain things like that that I would say, you can argue with me, or you can find other people that want to argue with me about it, that aren't going to change. But I think what we need to do is we need to draw a distinction between what I would say is behavioral and personality. And what I mean by that is, I, for example, On the assessments that I take my own medicine. So on one of the assessments, my organization tests very, very low. But if you walk into certain parts of my life, you will see that I'm very organized. But it's just not that it comes naturally. It's something that I have to work at. So I will never be naturally organized, and that part is not going to change. But outwardly speaking, I could be very organized. So, but when it comes to organization, I'm swimming against the current as opposed to with it. So let's use you as a case study real quickly. Would you say we're in the spectrum, 10 being
I don't know if
most
I feel comfortable with you. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. With 10 being the most organized,
okay,
and one just being totally scatterbrained, can't even find your own car keys, where would you put yourself?
Oh.
And don't give me a political answer right in the middle.
Oh, goodness. A 3.
Okay.
And that's being probably generous.
So three.
The absent-minded professor is my family of origin.
Okay. So, so if we were to go into your closet, would we see that 3 manifest itself? Or are all the blue shirts with the blue shirts, the white shirts with the white shirts?
Weirdly, if you went now, it's actually organized. But
okay,
because I was so tired of living after years and years in a lack of organization, that I've actually, that there's now a system, but that would not, that was hard for me.
Okay.
That was a lot of time.
Right. Yeah. So what you did there, so you're, the case study so far is working out, that didn't happen naturally, but if somebody, your behavior, your outward behavior in the realm of your closet is organized, but you're having to work at it, and you found a reason why you wanted to do that.
Yeah.
So you're able to be successful even in an area that's not coming naturally.
Yep.
But if you were in a role that required supreme organization all of the time, it's not that you couldn't do it.
It would be exhausting.
But you wouldn't be able to do it as well as other people. And as you pointed out, it would be exhausting.
And I wouldn't enjoy it. I mean, that's the whole deal. Yeah, it would not be, I don't find joy organizing my shirts, for instance.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, so if we make the distinction between what somebody's hardwiring is and what their outward behavior is, then I think it's a little bit easier to understand.
Which that makes sense. Okay, so tell me about you. Give me some stories of actually working with kids in this and seeing how is that impacting how, you know, how do I ask this question? The theory is very interesting to me. I'm also really interested in the practical application of it and what you're seeing when you do this
right
with students. I don't know how many years you've been doing it where we could sit and go, wow, this is 10 years later, this kid is doing this and it's really helped them. But what are you seeing at this point?
Yeah, no, I've got lots of fun and interesting stories. So I ran into somebody at church the other day that flagged me down, and he was like, hey, do you remember running, I won't use names, but do you remember running, you know, sewing through the program or whatever? Well, he got his degrees out there, and he just told me the other day, he goes, Dad, I found my peeps. He was kind of he was an athletic type, but also a bit nerdy into data analytics things. And that's kind of a rising profession that's becoming more and more needed with big data and all the other things that I won't get into.
Yeah, sure.
But he had gotten out the other side of college, and he was in a job and surrounded by people that were so this dad was commenting on some of the things that we had talked through when he went through, and he was just in his job and absolutely loving it. You know, there's another gentleman that I coached through it, and it was just so much of the academic piece was unenjoyable to him. He was involved in lots of extracurricular activities, but we were able to look at some of the gifting that he had on some of the assessments and some of the soft skills that he had. And it was very clear that even though his parents would have liked for him to be a straight A student, that if he could just sort of get through the last couple of years of college with a C or C plus grade, he was going to be absolutely fine because of some of the other assets that he had going for him. And so, yeah, so I've had follow up with him a couple of times since then, and just seen how he can see the light at the end of the tunnel on the other side.
Do you see, would your testing ever help someone think that they should not go to college?
It's a good question. It would probably come down to what is the return on investment?
Yeah.
And how much of a hardship would it be on that particular individual or their parents? In this last example that I gave you, his parents were well off. It was a relatively expensive education. Mm-hmm. He probably would have done just fine without the college degree, but it wasn't gonna be a big deal to his parents for him to go the rest of the way through college. Mm. I don't believe that college is for everybody. Mm-hmm. I think that it's becoming less and less necessary. There are probably a lot of people that would hear that and argue with me about that. But as there becomes an increase, a bigger gap between the competencies that students are coming out of college with and what the businesses really need, more and more companies are starting to get more disillusioned with what that college degree is.
Right.
And so they're looking more to, we want to be able to see that you're proficient in something, not just that you got a degree, not just that you put time in and finished certain classes, but we want to see that you can code in HTML or whatever it is. And I personally think, so quick side story as it relates to finances and saving for college, I met with somebody several months back, and they had maybe something like an 8 and a 10-year-old, and they were really, really worried about how much money they were going to have to save, because they looked at the progression of this, you know, back to University of Maryland, $180,000 for a degree at a
right.
absolutely marvelous
an incredible institution. Right, yeah.
But it's like, you know, so when you project those things out, okay, so it's right. going to, you know, in 20 years, it's going to cost $750,000 to send one kid, you know, it's not sustainable. And so I think that there are, I think that there are some shifts that are going to happen and that have already started to happen where businesses will put less emphasis on the actual degree and more on being able to prove that you're competent in a particular area. Real quick example from a celebrity standpoint, you can think of companies that might say, yeah, we don't hire anybody without a college degree. But let's say you were wanting to do something in the marketing realm, and I don't know how many of your listeners would follow tennis. We're a big tennis family, Serena Williams.
Sure.
So even people that don't follow sports too much would probably know her. But she's world-traveled. She speaks multiple languages. I mean, she wins the Italian Open and she accepts the trophy in Italian.
Right.
Does the same thing in French, and I don't know about Spanish. But so if somebody was looking at hire somebody with some marketing expertise and they didn't want her for her celebrity prowess, would they ever think, oh, she doesn't have a degree? No, they would realize she's been a continuous learner. There's a difference between going through formal education and being a continuous learner. So I think there's going to be, over time, there's going to be more and more emphasis on people being the type of people that will continuously learn and add to their skill set and their knowledge and can demonstrate proficiency in an area, whether or not they have the actual degree.
We're kind of stuck in a weird place right now, I feel like, with that. I mean, based on what you're saying of like, if we can look ahead and see a trajectory where we know we're more and more companies. And by the way, I'm a huge fan of education. Like I love education, but where more and more companies would say that is one of many things we consider instead of that is a barrier to entry, regardless of anything else. Right. That's kind of that progression. But right now, brutally, honestly, it still can be a barrier to entry. If I'm going to be honest, like I have kids come and ask me, part of this podcast is both of these students have chosen not to go to college right now.
Right.
The other podcast I was referring to. And if a student asks me, if I'm talking to a young person and they say, I don't have any interest in college. I don't have, you know, I want to go start this career. I know what it is. Is it, what do you think about that? I have to give a weird mixed answer right now of, well, on the one hand, I don't think college is for everybody, and I agree, and everybody kind of says that. But on the other hand, do understand that there are challenges there that you wouldn't have had otherwise, right? It's a weird mixed place.
Yeah. So let me give a Let me share something that I think might be helpful. Oftentimes, a both and answer is good. But if you told me we've got two students that are identical in almost every way, but one is going to go through college and one is not, and Scott, your income is going to be totally dependent on what their income is and ability to find a job. Okay. So we'll put some skin in the game there.
Okay. Yeah.
So if you told me that student A plans to not go to college, but they plan to do a lot of informational interviews, a lot of shadowing, a lot of online learning of sorts that they may or may not get any credit for, that they're going to build their network, that they're going to find ways to give to people and become an attractive person in the marketplace, but essentially go through and not have any college credits, or you're going to go through the other person is going to go through college and, you know, get a degree. We'll even distill it a little bit more and say they're going to get all A's, but they're going to kind of meander from an academic standpoint and not get any real world experience or have any real world interaction and come out the other side with the degree and not. Now, it doesn't have to be either extreme, but if you tell me that my income's dependent, I would pick the person who's not going to go to college every day of the week.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
so it's not that black and white. It's just that if you took person A, who's going to do all those things, and you said, oh, and by the way, they'll go get their degree too,
yeah,
you would tend to go, well, great. That just adds to it.
Yeah, then you write your own ticket.
But for some people, it's truly not their path. I don't get worried. When I see kids that are really going after it, like going after life, going, like you said, I love that example of, you know, they're learning, they're autonomously doing it. I've worked with plenty of people that don't have a college degree that are making amazing amounts of money and doing remarkable things, but it's a hard path,
right?
Or harder, maybe.
Yeah. And so I think it ends up being more of a stigma,
yeah,
than it is an actual barrier. The you said you're a huge proponent of education. I am too. It doesn't necessarily mean, I think what we probably say is we're huge proponents of learning and continuous learning. And with the pace of change and innovation in the marketplace, when I was trying to figure this out as a kid, I remember talking to a doctor and I was asking about what things to major in. And, you know, do I major in something specific that allows me to get a job, or do I do more of a general? And I remember him saying to me, you know, if the only value that I brought to an organization was what I learned in college, I wouldn't be very valuable,
right?
Because I've had to be in a continuous learning mode. And that was way back then. So I think it's been even more exacerbated now with the pace and volume of change. I mean, I was just reading today how technology and various things are progressing so rapidly that even people that are well-informed and technologically adept are continually surprised by what's popping up in the marketplace.
Right.
So it's hard. It's unprecedented. It's not linear. It's exponential in terms of the changes that are going on. And we can list it with artificial intelligence and, you know, robots and self-driving cars and all those types of things. And we've probably all heard about how certain majors exist today that 5 years ago didn't, and certain majors that our kids are going through now aren't going to be applicable in a few, you know, X number of years from now. So it's like, so it's about learning and education, but not necessarily the formal education.
See, that's okay. Well, what I like about your illustration goes to a deeper point, because a lot of parents are listening right now and they're thinking about everything from their 2 year old to they've got a kid in college right now or beyond, whatever. And I was a history major. So the number one question I got for the first number of years outside of school, people would ask me my major, or even when I was in school and it'd ask me, was kind of a laugh and a smirk.
What are you going to do with that?
What are you going to do with that? Right. Yeah. Always that answer. And there's a level at which I understand why they said that, because you sit and you can run analysis on what is the earning potential of this major versus this major, whatever.
Right.
But the reality was I was fascinated by history, and I'm so thankful for it. I use it in every job I've had. I've used it. I use it more now than I ever did before in many ways, because I think it's vital to what I do, even though nobody would say that, right? They'd say, go get a finance degree right off the bat. But I've loved it. But what I've noticed is that a lot of times parents, and I see myself, I have two middle school kids, I see myself easily falling into this too. We would rather check the box for what's easily quantifiable. So for instance, okay, my kid wants to go to college, check, and say, I feel good about that. Or, okay, they picked the right major, check, right? Because a lot of times there's a lot of dissension in the family if the kid chooses history instead of accounting,
right,
or business, something, yeah, quote unquote practical. It's easier to check those boxes than to go, you know what? I'm looking at the deeper things, like my child clearly has drive and they're pursuing an interest and they're following through on that pursuit and they're doing it with excellence. Things that would actually benefit them in the world beyond. Like you said, I would rather, if it's two extremes, I'd rather choose the kid to provide for me that is actually a self-learner and going after life and exploring new opportunities than the kid that just kind of goes and passes all their classes fine but doesn't really have direction in life. That's not as easy to quantify.
Right.
Right? And this is a hard point to get to, but I think it's dangerous for us as parents especially to sit and just, or maybe it's easy for us just to check the box of, oh, thank goodness Johnny wants to go to college. He just, you know, I don't have to worry about that. Instead of taking it a step deeper and going, are they really doing the things that would cause success? I don't know. Is that
right? Yeah. I think I know where you're coming from on it. And I think let me sort of respond to it this way. I think that we can all agree that a lot has changed over the years, whether it's the price of education or what businesses are demanding. The list of things that's changed is pretty significant. But I would contend that the advice that we were given, and a lot of us, if you go back, whatever, 10, 12 years ago and earlier from that, a lot of the advice that we were given was good advice at the time, but it's less applicable today. And so an example of that would be of just go get your degree and then you'll figure it out. You know,
right.
That's what I, you know, or, just do what you love and the money will follow.
Oh yeah.
And
we can talk about that for a while.
And yeah, that happens sometimes, or just work hard and save your passion and interest for the weekend. And so there are some of these extremes out there that are, it's not that it was bad advice, but it's just that some times have changed and the cost of the education is one of the biggest variables. So I would say, you didn't ask my opinion on this, but I would say on the history major part, you know, if that helped discipline and learning and reading and things like that that can be applied to other things, you know, that's great. If you were building your network and going through and taking the time to figure out, well, what do you want to do after the history major and how do you want to apply that or whatever, if you're doing some of those things to supplement the history major, then that's great too.
Sure.
But there's so many college grads now that are in jobs that don't require a college education, and yet they're strapped with all of this
incredible debt. Massive.
Yeah.
Debt.
And yeah. So again, if you can,
No, I mean,
I don't know if that helps.
And by the way, this is all great theory. You know, if my kid came to me in 3 years or 4 years and said, Dad, I really don't want to go to college, that would be really hard for me. So I can talk till I'm blue in the face about the theory of, you know, it's about the deeper things and it's not about, but if my kid doesn't want to check that box, it's going to be hard for me. I already right. know this.
And can I ask you why? Can I ask you why it would be hard?
Yeah, you can ask, and I don't really want to answer that. I have to think through. Why would that be hard? Because I want to see them be successful. I don't want to see them face challenges that I can see in front of them that they might not see yet. Okay, let me give a better answer. Because it's riskier. There's more risk. So in other words, if you give me 20 kids right now and they're all high school seniors, And of those 20 kids, they were all not going to go to college, right? How many of those kids if we talk to them in 15 years,
right,
will be really successful? If you give me 20 kids that are all going to go to a good college, not Maryland, right? No, yeah. A good college. How many of those kids are going to be successful in life? My assumption, and this could be wrong, people can call me on this. My assumption is the 20 kids going to college are going to have had more quote unquote measurable success than the 20 kids that don't. That doesn't mean in any case that any one of those kids, though, that didn't go to college couldn't be Mark Zuckerberg.
Right. You know, yeah. That's exactly who I was thinking of.
Way
right.
By,
yeah.
I totally get that.
Okay.
But it's a harder road because I do think there's a level at which who you surround yourself with. Like if you go to college, go to a good school, for instance, yeah. and you're around a bunch of kids that are all going, we're going to go get these great jobs.
Right.
You
Harvard
kind
alum,
of look at it
Maryland
as normative.
Alum versus, yeah, yeah.
You know, you go, oh, well, I'm going to get a good job too. Whereas if you are the kid that doesn't go to college and most of the other people in your peer group that are, they're not off at school are working part-time jobs somewhere.
Right.
It's harder to go and break into that.
Yeah. So let me try to isolate a couple of variables. Would you say if one of your kids doesn't want to go to college, that would be hard?
I'm going to get in so much trouble for the way I said this.
Yeah. when you say, you know, Dad, I don't want to go to college. Is there a difference between I don't want to go to college and I don't care about finishing college? So would you feel the same if your child went 3.5 years and learned, you know, 90%+ of what they were ever going to learn if they went 4 years, but they didn't have the, you know, so when your friend or neighbor says, oh, so where did your son graduate from?
This is hitting close to home because my a dear person, part of my family, that's part of my family, is in this situation where she has got straight A's, is almost done, has basically one semester left of school, got a great job, a full-time job, very successful, and is not, as of yet, has not finished school, has
right.
stopped indefinitely. Now, was very successful in school, is now very successful, and yet in my conversation with her a few weeks ago, I said, I would strongly encourage you to finish because you're so close
right.
and there was so much put into it. Why not put that on your tool belt?
Right.
But you're hitting right there. So
yeah. Yeah. And so I think we need to distinguish between how we might feel as a parent to be able to say, yeah, my kid didn't graduate from college or they did or something like that. From the tangible impact of that could be in a lot of circles, that would be a stigma. Mm-hmm. And if you can eliminate that stigma with just a little bit of money and time and effort, then sort of why not? And so, yeah, so I think those are some of the things that I predict. We'll be able to come back and listen to this X number of years from now and see whether I was right or wrong. But I predict that some of those things will fade and it will become less and less of a stigma. I would just go back to, I think we want to distinguish between learning and drive and completing a task versus just getting the degree.
Just getting the degree.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And I think this is normal for me that I see, I know something, I believe something strongly, but then the rubber hits the road, right? So that's the beauty of having children. That's the beauty of being in relationship with humans is that it's easy to spout off any number of things that you believe. When I was a youth pastor years ago, I could tell you all about how to be a great parent.
Right.
And now I have three kids and it's like, this is hard.
Yeah.
How do you do this? How
right.
do you handle this in the moment?
Reality is a good teacher.
And so it's tough for me to say how would I feel about my kids. Other than that, I know that my knee-jerk, hopefully I would ponder it and think about it and have good questions and make a good choice. But my knee-jerk reaction, I think, if one of my kids says, I don't want to do that, I'm going to be concerned.
Right.
Even though that might not be healthy, even though healthy might be for them not to go.
Right.
But I agree. I want to be the kind of person that says, I'm looking for those deeper things that college may be a great fit for. Or it might be, maybe it's healthy for you to take a year off. I don't
right.
know.
So let me go to the other extreme. Some people are probably thinking I'm much
We're
more
advocating not going to college.
Or that I'm much more anti-education than I really am.
Right.
But I would say let's at least not encourage people to go the other extreme and be like, okay, I came out of college. I can't find the only job I can find doesn't even require a college degree. So I guess I need to get a master's degree and go even farther into debt. There was one particular student that I counseled mm-hmm. who had gotten a teaching degree. His wife was in a job and was going to be cutting back. So they were going to be looking at how do we make this work on one income. And as a teacher, it was going to be harder. So he wanted to go back and get his MBA to be able to do, you know, such and such. And so I really kind of, I said, you know, you've been out of the, you went through undergraduate school. You've been out a couple of years. You're thinking that this MBA degree is going to be your silver bullet, your, you know, golden ticket, whatever. I said, but what you need to be thinking about is you go, you take X number of years to get that degree while you're still doing some of the teaching, and you're going to come out at that point. Right now, you don't feel qualified to go out and get a job in the business world, and maybe you're not to a lot of people, but you're not probably not giving yourself a lot of credit, as much credit as you deserve. But what's going to happen is you're going to spend all that time and money getting that degree, and then you're going to have that degree, and you're still going to be competing with people that have the degree and X number of years of real world experience
right.
in that business world. So I was like, don't do it. Don't do it. And I'm not sure how much he actually listened to me. He ended up not going to graduate school, and he got into a little bit more of an apprenticeship type situation in real estate, and he's killing it now. And I think he would tell you, you know, honestly, I'm so glad that I didn't spend that time and money to be able to do that. It wasn't just about the degree. He had to make connections to be able to get into that job. He had to work hard. He had to get certifications in the area of real estate where he was. But it wasn't about the degree, but it was about quote unquote education and continuous learning.
Yeah. It seems like what you're saying in essence is it's about the why and like helping kids understand, and not just kids, helping all of us understand as we go through. It's not, I say this about financial stuff all the time. It's not fair to say that XYZ financial product is good or bad, which is very popular. It's popular to get up and say this product is bad or this is good. That's what people, talking heads like me, do this all the time. And we do the same thing about college. We say college is good, not college, no, college is bad, right? The harder but far more honest reality is financial products are tools. And so it's like saying to a hammer, is a hammer good or bad? No, right. It's a hammer. What's the job? What are we trying to do? And so in this case, is an MBA good or bad? No, it's a tool.
Right.
Is it a tool that's needed and it's actually healthy based on your situation or not?
Yeah.
And the same with college.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a great way to think about it. And that dovetails well with when people go through and look at the assessment. Sometimes people will feel a little bit puffed up when they see some of their assessment results. And sometimes mm-hmm. they'll be a little bit depressed. And it's like, okay, God didn't make any mistakes. There's not a right or wrong in this.
Right.
And I'll have to say to people, you know, if you're an athlete, is it good to be tall or not? And it's kind of a trick question. Well, if it's basketball, it's good. If it's gymnastics or, you know, some other sport, you know, yeah. then it's
jockey.
Not. Yeah.
Problematic.
Yeah, really. Jockey. Yeah. Tall jockey. You don't see too many of those. So I think it's not always right, always wrong, not always good, always bad.
But,
yeah.
But I like the idea of being more intentional. I remember so clearly when I was in college, I suddenly became very intentional after I got married. Mm-hmm. And then 7 months later, my wife was pregnant with our firstborn. And suddenly going to school was no longer this. It was kind of good. It was like, I've got to find gainful employment and this degree matters.
Right.
But the juxtaposition of being in classes with kids that were mm-hmm. normal college students that didn't really give a rip. Now, some of them did. Some of them didn't. But suddenly having a deep why of like, there's a very yep. purposeful reason that I'm here. And so I'm taking it seriously.
Yeah.
And I love that what you're doing is helping kids even earlier than that have an idea of this is why I'm in this course.
You know,
this is why I'm here.
That is so huge. I mean, if you look at the word motivation, it breaks down into motive and action, reason for action. So you had that reason for action. There's a good friend of mine that's a speaker author, and she goes into public schools, and she talks about sex education and motivation and things like that. And she's so big on talking to them about their why, because it's their why that can help, knowing what their why is and knowing what that they've got something in their future to work towards, gives them so much motivation to make better decisions now and to say no to some of the bad things that they should say no to and yes to some of the other things. So that's huge. Some of your listeners are, I'm sure, are familiar with Simon Sinek, that has that TED Talk video that you've seen on why, where he talks about Martin Luther King and the Wright brothers and things. It's fascinating for people that haven't, you should look it up, Simon Sinek on TED Talk or whatever, but you know, knowing the why is huge. Knowing the why is huge, and then knowing how God is uniquely, from my perspective, God, other people, the Creator,
sure,
has uniquely wired us. There aren't any mistakes, and there's nobody. We're like snowflakes in a good way, that, you know, no two are alike, and that, you know, there's a fit for everybody. And knowing some of those things more deeply can give you more confidence, more self-esteem, and also make you so much more attractive when you're talking to a prospective employer, where you can say, here's what my strengths are, here's what my weaknesses are. You've got a better understanding of yourself, which makes you a much more attractive hire, a much less risky hire. So there are all kinds of side benefits from it.
Yeah, but that's really neat.
You can tell I'm not biased about what people should do.
That's what, man, I am so thankful for the work you're doing, only because, you know, so much of what I talk about is quality of life. And I meet with a lot of folks in their 50s and 60s who are looking back at their careers now. They still are working, but they're looking back at the bulk of their careers, and they're going, exactly what you talked about up front, which is, I kind of wish I'd gone in another direction. And there's always the grass is greener thing going there, where you can sit and go, would it have been different to go here? But there's also just a reality sometimes of like, I stuck with this thing, and I would love to be on the other side of that and go with my kids, how can we do our best to narrow this to really help you find something you're going to find fulfillment in? Not just income, right, not just, oh, you could make the most money in B, so go there, but truly walk out going, I feel like I met my purpose, and I found that right blend of success and happiness.
Yeah. Well, I would encourage you to keep doing more podcasts on this subject. You and I probably won't get to do another one, but when you look at the benefits of this, that you can be helping people reduce the amount of debt, or at very least, reduce the amount of wasted money, given what a high percentage of people change their majors, change schools, take courses that were unnecessary, don't get their degree in 4 years. The amount of dissatisfaction that you can help eliminate when people are in a career that they're, I call it looking forward to putting your socks on Monday morning. I mean, life is too short and too long to be doing something that you just really hate. The opportunity cost of not being in something, and even just sort of on a grander scale from a productivity perspective, either for a company or for a nation. Mm. I mean, one real quick analogy, I just, in preparation for our time today, I was thinking about, can you imagine the football team that puts together, and they're like, hey, just sort of, you know, pick the position that you think you'd like or enjoy, you know, the most. We're not going to really test anything or whatever. And somebody who really should be the quarterback ends up saying, I want to be a kicker, and vice versa, versus somebody who's gone through it versus a coach and a team and a general manager that really tests and looks at things in detail. I mean, which one is going to be, just from a productivity standpoint,
yeah,
which is going to be better? And it's just so, I'd sort of encourage people to sort of think about it from that mindset.
Because it's holistic. It's on every level. It's the productivity. It's their fulfillment in doing it. It's, have you ever been in a position where you know you're not a fit and how miserable that is? Or, I mean, there's so much that I love thinking that way. And the idea of how do we encourage our children to do that from the outset so that they have more joy as they go through. That's neat.
Yeah.
Two questions I ask everybody that comes in, Scott.
Yeah.
So first question is this. What's one lesson about money that you were taught growing up, and this is not necessarily spoken, it could be, but it could be unspoken, good or bad, that stuck with you? What's one lesson you were taught from your upbringing?
Yeah, well, I'll admit to cheating a little bit because I've listened to some of your other podcasts, and I took you at your word knowing that you would be, but I really didn't need the advanced preparation on this. I mentioned my dad went to Princeton, and I grew up in Pittsburgh. We kind of lived in an area that was a little bit like the Buckhead of Pittsburgh, a lot of the professional athletes. So it was I felt like it was a middle class upbringing, but still it was probably, you know, better than I realized or whatever. But my parents always drove old cars. And probably washed the cars about once every 3 years. And so I feel like I learned that a car is for transportation. It's not to go into debt over. It's not to impress other people. So in my business in executive recruiting, I have to drive a semi nice. So, you know, I drive a Lexus, but I bought it. It had 100,000 miles on it, and it's got 150,000 miles on it, and I plan to keep it to 250. So I would say a car is for transportation, and that's it. And I wash mine a little bit more often, but to be honest, not much.
I don't know if I've told, I know I've told this story before, but I love that. My my first car was a 1990 Toyota Camry station wagon, which they used to make. And if you Google 1990 Toyota Camry station wagon, I would put that up as in the top five ugliest cars ever made. Ever. And it was so bad that I would walk into, like be with friends, I'd go out to eat with friends, and I would encourage, I would like be walking out to our cars, and then I'd go, oh, I forgot I need to use the bathroom, or I forgot my wallet. Oh. And I'd walk back inside just so they could all leave before I walked out to my car. But amazing lesson in what's the purpose of the vehicle.
Yeah.
It got me there. It got me there until I didn't realize it was low on oil and the engine seized. And we had to get rid of the car, which my dad still thinks that was intentional, but I just was absent-minded.
Well, that's something else we have in common.
But it worked out well. You know, what do we have in common?
My first car, I was in a cold climate, and I pulled into a self-service gas station. They used to have those, and I asked them to check the oil because I hadn't checked it in a while. And he said, yeah, it's fine. 2 days later, I ran dry. So I sold, when I moved, I a few weeks later, I sold my bicycle for more than I sold my car for.
So, that's fantastic.
It's a tough lesson to learn.
Second question for you is this. What's one thing you're investing in right now that you're seeing the greatest return? That could be anything from finance to just in life. What are you investing in right now where you're seeing a significant return?
Yeah, good penetrating question. Given what I do in executive recruiting, I'm out talking to a lot of high performers. And so that's what I end up getting paid to do. But because of being in that business, the size of my contacts and Rolodex has increased over the years. And so I'm able to facilitate some good connections. There are a whole lot of things that I can't do myself, but there are a lot of people that I know that have means and or can do other things. So just the other day, I helped a nonprofit ministry. I set up a meeting with somebody that could become a major donor or could help in some other ways in terms of a partnering thing. And there probably could be some financial gain that would come to me from that over time. But even assuming nothing comes from that, just sort of the...